Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we're consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
Scott, you look like the skateboarding type.
Well, how did you know? Tony Hawk and I used to do kick turns all the time.
I don't know if I believe that, but I do believe that you're going to enjoy the Ollie by Davies Design Build in this year's Salt Lake Parade of Homes.
Well, we have Ed Axley, the CEO, which means he's the man, right? Ed?
Yeah. Yes, he's the man. So.
And so we're so happy to have you here because we've been so impressed. And honestly, I went on the website and looked at a couple of your homes and I was like blown away. I actually might go out and see these, but I'm not taking my wife. You know that, Stephanie.
Yeah, Scott doesn't ever want to show his wife the luxury. What makes this home unique?
Okay, so first, the home is fabulously placed right outside of Parley's Canyon.
Oh.
And so a lot of people are going to wonder why the home is called the Ollie.
Uh-huh.
Well, if we talk about it for a second, it'll become evident. So the home is a modern design, transitional on the inside, clean lines. In fact, the masonry and everything on the outside is meant to kind of blend in with the mountain surroundings. The lot isn't amazingly wide. It's a little bit deeper than normal lots. So the house was actually designed to take advantage of the square footage of the lot. So the frontage of it is not going to be as fabulously wide as many others, but it does fit the lot perfectly. So the intent and the inspiration behind the home was to take advantage of its environment, of the mountains around it, the hills, the, you know, the rocks and the trees. So it itself kind of tries to fit into that and allows the person on the inside to take advantage of all of the environment by looking through these fabulous windows, these, you know, these great settings, these big open areas. All of that is part of the design. Now, Ollie. Why is it called Ollie?
Scott's been here wondering.
Yes.
So the basement in particular is a wonderful design also. It has this kind of very unique openness to it, even though it's a basement. For example, it has what would in essence be a window well, but it's not necessarily a window well. It's almost like something out of a commercial setting. It's the window in the basement is so large, with the window well being ample enough to make it feel like you're not subterranean, you're actually in the main level of the of the lot.
It's like a backyard.
It's like a backyard, but the basement has been designed around skateboarding.
Really?
So it has a half pipe in the basement, and it has imported brick from Chicago to line the backdrop of the wall to give it that inner city feel. It has a local graffiti art type of motif on the wall that was done by a local art instructor. The whole point of the home is to be enjoyed and to enjoy the environment and to do the things you love, which for this particular homeowner is skateboarding and family and friends. So,
well, here yeah,
of all the terminologies you could use to call the home anything, right? I mean, you could use lots of different things of that kind of subject.
Uh-huh.
But Ollie just
so is that
fit.
A skateboarding term then?
Yes, an Ollie is a simple jump on a board.
Oh, cool!
You get both feet on the board. If you can get both, you know, both sets of wheels off the ground and land it successfully, and you're facing frontward, it's called an Ollie. It's the first thing anybody learned.
This is so unique. So where do you guys like get inspiration for when a client comes and they're like, okay, I want a skate park in my basement. Have you seen, is that really unusual?
No. So for our clients, it's not.
Really?
We do all sorts of amazingly interesting and fabulous things in our homes from everything, from skate parks to fire poles to climbing gyms to, you know, to elevated pools, to all sorts of things. this home in particular was headed up and designed with our lead designer, Stacy Slaney. She's been with us for many, many years now, and she's wonderfully talented at what she does. So when clients come in, we do discoveries with them. We don't necessarily have one architectural style that we do in particular. We believe that we're curators of architectural and interpretations. So whatever you feel like you would like to have, or whatever your wishes are, we will then curate designs and materials and elements around that. And just like any good curator or the best curators out there, ultimately the museum on display becomes appealing to the public and becomes loved by the client and by the, you know, by the families, right? So we believe that we are the best curators of architectural design. And our leads on that, like Stacy Slaney, who had up this design up there, is as talented as it comes. And she, you know, she helped through that discovery process and helped curate those elements around this house to create the Ollie.
Which is so cool. And I, as you're talking about creating like whatever people want, I've always told people, and they've made fun of me, I'm like, I want a wave pool with a lazy river around
yes.
it. I want old-fashioned booths with an ice cream machine and a stage for karaoke. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, like you're such a dreamer. But hearing you talk about this, I'm like, no,
it can
like,
be done.
No. If I get the money, you can do the design.
So we did things like in the past, we had a, you know, we love through these discovery moments with these clients to find out just how they live and what yeah. they like to do. We had a client come in one time and she didn't really have a lot of hobbies, and her pastime was quite literally playing hide and seek with her children. She had a large family.
Oh, cool.
She was a young mother, but she had 7 or 8 children. And so we designed this entire house around hide and seek. So we had 2 separate sets of stairwells on both sides of the house so that if you got chased from one side of one floor to another, you could go down to another floor without having to backtrack. Every house, every level was designed in a circle so that you could run without running into a dead end. And then every room had a secret passage behind the main passage. And most of the rooms actually had secret hallways in between and running parallel to other hallways. So you could go between walls, you could go over walls, you could go around rooms, you could duck through secret mirrors, secret bookshelves, secret beds, secret
looks like holes. A castle. Like
those are so cool.
And these are a little bit larger homes,
yeah.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
but to be able to play a perfect game of hide and go seek was the inspiration. And we nailed it. Like, it was perfect. And then, you know, we've had many other ones. And, you know, like this, like if you had come in, we would build you a surf pool in your backyard. There would be, and we would make it the best one, not only here, but probably in the United States.
See, this is what I love, because, you know, I'm not motivated by travel, like going to every country, but to have that type of cool house that I could just hang out in my lazy river, that motivates me.
Well, this
to reach
Ollie,
for the stars,
this,
you know?
This Ollie sounds like it'd bring me, you know, I'm from Baltimore. So that's almost like recreating Baltimore right there in the house.
At the Inner Harbor.
At the Inner Harbor.
Yeah.
And so the Chicago brick, actually, that was imported for this house is yeah. very similar to the red brick you would find
in
Baltimore, the Inner
really?
Harbor.
That's
well, you know,
that's
you would appreciate this. My office, I'm a big fan of red Baltimore brick.
Oh, you are?
A huge
yeah.
fan. So I have handmade red brick in my office with an actual hand tooling of the mortar joints as
really?
The backdrop of my desk.
I got to go. See, you got to invite me, you know, to be able to
It'll
come
make
to your
you think
office.
Of the Inner Harbor.
I know. And I love the Inner
or
Harbor.
Or Camden Yards.
Oh, my gosh, Camden Yards. I mean, you know, I was there when they built it. I could go on
Scott's
and on.
Scott's like,
about,
totally
but, you know,
no.
Camden Yards is a perfect example of being able to take a product and make it something unique, but still make it a ballpark. And houses, it seems to me, are similar.
Yeah, houses are very similar. You have to be able to see the end.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can see the end, then you can visualize the path there. But if you can't, you know, if immediately you say, well, that can't be done, or that's too difficult, or And the favorite one is, that's just too much money. You can't afford it. There's all sorts of ways to do it. So before you just immediately eliminate those options as witches does once, we should at least explore everything. We should turn over every stone and shake every bush and kick every tree. Not everything has to cost $10 million. There's lots of things you can do that are fabulously affordable, and you can achieve your wants and your wishes without immediately saying no.
Now you got me thinking about building a house that looks like Camden Yards, kind of work the ball field in there.
With water, since you're always complaining that we don't have a lot of water.
Water, because I love the water this back east.
So if I were to do yours, I would do your house in an L shape, and I would have the garage on one side, and I would do a traditional salt box English structure with virtually zero eaves on it, so that it had that industrial Baltimore feel.
Yeah.
And I would bring the red brick all the way up to the eaves, and then I would do those simple soldier row lintels above it, above each window, with a quasi-thin framed black glass on it to match this.
Scott's like drooling over here.
And then your backyard would be diamond-shaped in between the L of the two wings, so that your master suite could look over the one side of the yard, and your garage, you would pull in on the other side. So your backyard kitchen could be off of your garage side, your master suite, then your main family room come off the center. And then that diamond, you could put a kid's play path in almost like a diamond formation around the perimeter of the backyard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the grandkids come.
I'm telling you, we could build Camden Yards as your right house. I know that stadium.
Oh, my gosh. This is really – now, I'm going to have to talk to Title One. They're going to have to start paying
you some
more
money. Our owners aren't going to be happy that we're like, hey.
No. This could be a 5,000-foot home on a quarter-acre lot. I didn't say it had to be anything huge.
We'll have to talk sometime. That would be like dying and going to heaven. I always wanted to die in Camden Yards. So, hey, I'm close anyway, 70 at my age. So, we'll talk about
that.
Well,
it's just fun to see, the wheels start working for you. And you're like, oh, this and this. I can only imagine how to have your dream home. Like, that hide-and-seek family, that's going to be so many memories for those kids, and it's so unique. Or Scott one day having kids.
One day I'll get that Camden Yard. And we can even name the street Camden Yard. We'll find a little cul-de-sac that's not
and the
built
other
yet.
Street, Silver Dollar Man.
Silver Dollar
Man. Silver Dollar Man.
Yes, that's
his
one.
Nickname.
Yeah, that's my nickname. I'll tell you that story some other time. But is there a part of this house the Ollie that you personally like? I mean, is there something about what you built in that house that stands out to you as uniquely you've never done before?
Interesting that you asked that. So there's a lot of really cool things about the house. And one of the things that I like is I like the they did an interesting application of a polished, honed black cinder block wall. The wall is it's a cinder block wall. But it's stacked wonderfully, but it's polished and honed, so you could actually see the aggregate inside. But it's a black block. So instead of doing, say, a wall and painting it black, or doing something else, and having just a black product up like a tile or something, you're actually seeing the composition of the stone, what actually makes up the block itself. The aggregates of different kind. And I just think there's something, and the fact that it's polished, it's something very raw, it's something very unique. You don't see that in very many homes, but it has this texture to it. It makes it draws you in. It makes you want to go over and just touch it. I mean, of course, everybody that wants to goes to the house is going to want to skateboard in it, and, and it's going to want to swim in the pool in the backyard and lay out the cabana. But I think those are all fabulous, but it's the minute kind of granular details of the house, like the polished aggregate and this black block, that look just spectacular. In fact, that very few, if any, other house in Utah has that is kind of fun.
And is this on the inside or the outside?
Yes.
Okay, so where is it, just all throughout?
Yeah, there's little accents of it. Yeah. So you'll have to just come to it and take a look.
But then I feel like that's why we liked getting these details, because now people can listen to it and then they're going to be looking for the black. is cinder block. So
yeah, I think polished. I think they will not be disappointed if they come to this home. I think it'll be a showstopper.
Well, and you know, it is things like that. It's funny you should bring up that because I'm picturing in my mind, you're painting a pretty good picture of this black cinder block. And it is interesting when you go into certain houses and you see certain textures that immediately you're kind of drawn to it.
Yes.
And there are a lot of homes that are so boring that there's nothing to draw you to anything. But those kind of unique textures really are quite fascinating because you don't see them and immediately you do want to come over and put your hand. Anything that'll draw you that you want to put your hand on is something pretty unique.
This architecture is a lot like designing and developing a house or a building is a lot like designing and developing clothing and makeup for people.
Mm-hmm.
Architecture, style, design, it all runs hand in hand, right? What makes things often beautiful are shadow lines. You know, so in a person that could be curves, right? Yeah. On a house, it's shadow lines. Shadow lines can be offsets on windows. They can be overhangs on doors. They can be angles in the architecture. You know, shadow lines, articulations, different kinds of things. And then if you want to look at textures are really kind of like makeup. So, you know, if you can take a beautiful woman and put a little makeup on and all of a sudden you're drawn to her, right? Or you comb a man's hair and all of a sudden you're drawn to him, right? So textures tend to be those elements for homes. So our hope and our wishes are to always have an appropriate amount of shadow lines, articulations, and textures, just like you would have curves, clothing, and makeup.
That's an interesting parallel you draw there because, again, you can visualize that. In my opinion, interesting homes are hard to find. And I'm not – that isn't to say there aren't great architectures out there. It's just I don't – maybe you don't get to go into those homes, and that maybe that's why the Parade of Homes is so fascinating.
Well, you can have a really amazing architect that doesn't – that can draw the most structurally perfect house with the most amazing symmetry. That doesn't mean he knows how to make it pretty.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you can also have somebody that knows how to make something beautiful, but they don't know how to make it actually work. There's a lot of combined efforts and energy in there that you have to kind of think all the way through, right? The other interesting thing too is just like with makeup, if you wear too much, it's tacky, yeah. Right? So textures can be too much. And you can, and then actually you can have different types of textures and shadow lines and everything like that. And even the collection can become eclectic, but eclectic can be beautiful. But if it's too much, that's what we call hodgepodge.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a fine line between having just enough to not be boring and having not too much so you can avoid being tacky.
We're recording this a little bit before the parade, but I went to the Utah Valley Parade of Home and went through the Maple Lake. Is that?
Yeah, the Maple Lake.
Yeah, you're a Maple Lake. And so many of the walls I wanted to touch.
I know.
And there were signs all over saying,
don't touch.
But because of the textures of the wallpaper in the bathrooms or the different tile and stuff, and it really does draw you to it. To the point that you really have to say don't
smile
touch.
So yeah. Much because that means it worked.
It's worked.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk into, like, if you turn the corner on that Maple Lake Parade home and you go into the master bedroom, you immediately see this fabulous wall-hung mural wallpaper that actually paints a scene of kind of this early French countryside. And it's from floor to ceiling, like on a 10-foot floor, and it wraps the whole room, and it never repeats a pattern. And you walk in as if you're walking into a French garden, but you're inside the master bedroom suite. I mean, it draws you in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's supposed to do. You're supposed to love being in your home. You're supposed to want to go into those rooms, and you're supposed to feel happy, complete, beautiful, strong, handsome in those rooms. If the architecture doesn't do that for you, if you don't feel better about who you are as a person, and if your family doesn't feel more collective, and if you don't create better memories because of the architecture, then the architecture failed.
Well, here's a question for you then. So most people don't live in monstrous homes, and those, you know, high square foot homes have a tendency to give you more options in regards to what you're just talking about. So when you get back to the average, I don't know what it is in Utah, but let's say a 4,000 square foot home, which is still a decent size home, what can you do in those kinds of homes to enhance? And maybe I'm asking a question that has no answer to it, but I'm just thinking off of the top of my
head. Non-luxury homes.
So, well, nice homes.
Yeah, nice homes.
But, you know, space does give you an option mm-hmm. of doing a lot of things, and you get in a smaller space, and I'm sure there are things that can be done. I just think most people don't know how to do them, and therefore they don't like their homes.
I have a whole personal philosophy on how architecture should be. And one of them is size doesn't make it better. It actually often doesn't solve the very thing that you're trying to achieve. Most people build homes because they want somewhere to live. They want somewhere safe for them and their family. But second, they want to create memories. They want a place where they can create the texture of life that everybody desires, things that they will take pictures of, things that they will write about in their journals, things that they give them something to talk about in their stories. Where is that going to take place? What's going to take place in your home? So when people come in to design these homes, this is often a common debate that we have even with our clients. Bigger doesn't make it better. More doesn't make it better. For example, when you're growing up, the vast majority of our best memories are hanging out at grandma's house or our aunt's house or some family member's house, right? And generally, and for most of America, those were small homes. So yeah. What made those homes spectacular? Well, the reality was it was everybody that was there. So, and everybody that's there, then the memory becomes very contextual. Like it has tons of interesting parts to mm-hmm. it. When you're there, you can smell your uncle's aftershave. You can hear your aunt tell those jokes. You can, you know, your cousin slapped you on the shoulder. You taste your grandma's food, and then just the comfort of seeing everybody, and then hearing all the conversations and all the hopes and the wishes and the wants and the aspirations, and then you leave and you go home and you go, that was a great evening. So was it the 10,000 foot home that made it a great evening? No. It was the people that were there, and it was the context at which it happened. So architecture should encourage those gatherings. In fact, human interactions are interesting. If I sit more than 5 feet away from you, you'll probably turn and talk to the next person. Because mm-hmm. if I'm more than 5 feet away, it's too far away. But to be closer than 3 feet is actually somewhat uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So the way you place your furniture throughout the house mm-hmm. should encourage human interactions. How often when you go to a rotunda, at like the rotunda at the Capitol building, how often do you see people standing in the center of it talking to each other?
You don't.
If you go to a big conference banquet hall, unless there's tables out in the middle, where do people stand? They walk in, they may walk out to the center, but they'll immediately gravitate to the wall and they'll congregate and talk next to the wall. Mm-hmm. Architecture is like a blanket. It's safety, it's security. It creates a niche for interaction. So architecture should do that. It should be designed in a way to encourage those interactions. So big doesn't always make it better. More doesn't always make it better. But there is an interesting thing, like our Maple Lake home is 10,000 feet or whatever, but none of those rooms were monumentally large. It wasn't like we had a 700 square foot master bedroom. We had a large master bedroom, but it was just large enough to have one seating area and the bed. The great room, no different than our Salt Lake Parade. They're large and wonderful, but the furniture in there is perfectly placed so that the couches are no further apart than, say, 2 feet. The ottomans are no farther out than, say, 3 or 4 feet away. It creates interaction between humans. If it gets bigger than that, if you create a great room that's, say, 900 to 1,000 feet, you have to all of a sudden create pods yeah. of sitting areas, because if you do it in a traditional way and you just push everything out, you'll find no one will use it. And if no one uses the room that you just spent a gazillion dollars on building, then you failed.
Right.
So it has to be woven and designed with forethought of how people are going to interact. And because if without memories, then the house has no value.
It's so true. And some of these houses, if you know, you do go into some of these rooms and they feel empty. I mean, you just don't want to be in it.
No, so you can have a small room and put an interesting texture on the wall, or an interesting color, you know, on mm-hmm. the on the floor, or open it up with windows or whatever you want to. And it's still a small room, but it's inviting. So then you're drawn in. Mm-hmm. And then when you're in there and you're enjoying the room with somebody, creating these memories, the texture of the room becomes part of the texture of your memory. That memory becomes more vivid, and it becomes longer lasting. Because not only were you there with the person and you enjoyed the time in there because the room felt good, but the room added extra context to what was happening. So it becomes this ever ingrained, fabulous memory of life. And so you can do that in a 12 by 12 room. It doesn't have to be 30 mm-hmm. by 30.
Well, and I think that makes sense of how you're talking about where the furniture is placed too.
Yeah.
Because I've even noticed I have a couch that has a really long, like, I don't know what it's called, but it's long and extended that you could like lay down on.
Like a peninsula.
Yeah, yeah. But people don't like sitting there if it's just like two people. They feel awkward, so they'll go and sit somewhere else. Yeah, like, so I realized, I was like, oh, you know, like, if people know each other, then this couch is utilized. But when it's, I just have people that don't know each other over, it's like, oh, I don't have as much seating as I thought. And so that's interesting where you're like, 3 feet is too close mm-hmm. sometimes for people, but then 5 feet, was it 5 feet?
Is 5 feet is too far.
Too far?
Well, it begins the you know,
disconnect.
The disconnect.
Yeah.
You get 6 feet and it's way too far.
Right?
Yeah.
And so on some of the furniture, even for a smaller place, like, it's just cool to go to the parade and look at the inspiration of how a room's set up and then try, be like, oh, here's where the ottoman is and stuff, and try to take that to your own home.
My wife and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time. And, you know, big couches, for example, are not always the best for casual acquaintances.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to sit on a couch with somebody they just barely met.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if the chairs are separate, they'll sit within 2 feet of each other.
Yes.
Yeah. But on a couch, they won't sit within 3 feet of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have three big cushions, but one will sit over here with their arm on the left and the other person will sit over here with their arm on the right. So you bought this $9,000 couch that nobody uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If your world is casual acquaintances,
mm-hmm.
if you're family centric and your relationships are much more frequent with more intimate relationships, then the couches work great
mm-hmm.
because, you know, siblings will lay on top of each other
and
mm-hmm. actually it's even better. So you have to analyze who you are. How do you entertain and how do you enjoy life? Because that will determine what type of furniture you should buy. Don't buy what you see on Pinterest. Don't just look at house. You have to actually analyze who you are, how you entertain, and what is its predominant use, and how are you going to create the best environment to encourage the best outcome.
That is so fascinating to me because, like I said, I just had a bridal shower for a friend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I have plenty of seating, you know, put chairs up. Because I was like, the couch can fit like six people. But no, it was literally like two people on the couch in big spots. And so that is cool to be like, how do you entertain and find the furniture that works best for that?
So we just did a home. Actually, it's our Utah County Parade of Home. The kitchen island, and nobody really knows this, actually has two secret massive doors on it. The island's large. And it's there for the purpose of storing plastic chairs and tables.
That is smart.
So on a moment's notice for those more casual encounters, you can pull out those lifetime plastic chairs. And it's funny to have a $6 million house and line the room with lifetime plastic chairs, but it's perfect. Nobody argues about that.
Yeah.
When they come into those kind of things, you know, it's no different than if you go to the Grand America and they have a conference there. Those chairs are just lifetime plastic chairs.
Yeah.
You know, you're just sitting in the same kind of thing, but nobody thinks about the fact that they're sitting in a $250 million hotel and they're sitting on plastic chairs, because it's not. It's the environment, right? The fact that they had an individual chair makes it much more comfortable for those gatherings of acquaintances.
Yes.
I mean, I don't remember what furniture was in half of my stuff, or what I do have is memories of the feeling. And if you can create that feeling in a home, that's a great thing. And if you can create it in a unique home, that's even better.
Right.
Like some of the parade, you know, like we're talking about, whether it's Camden Yards or those kinds of things. And I'm interested. I know that you guys have received awards. What kind of awards have you?
Oh yeah, on garnered? Your website there were so many awards.
Well, thank you. That's really nice to notice.
I was impressed.
So we've been doing this for a long time, and in fact, I think this Salt Lake Parade is probably at least our 18th Parade of Homes. We've won numerous People Choice Awards, and on top of that, we've been recognized for lots of different things at state levels, at you name it, from all over the place. In fact, an interesting award that I'm proud of, we won second place in World of Concrete for the most complicated residential structure in America.
Whoa.
We built a concrete home several years ago designed to be a blast zone house for an atomic war.
Really?
So we did radiation proof rooms with radiation filtration systems, and we did dual and triple fuel systems throughout the house so that they could pull things off. We did city municipal systems that could be switched to on-site systems.
Is that here in Utah?
You mean? Yeah, it's here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And then the whole house was concrete, meaning concrete foundation, concrete walls, concrete floor systems, concrete roof. So it was basically a pretty parking structure. And at that time, and I didn't know this, but the record of exterior outside corners on a concrete structure was 27. And I think we had 29 corners on this house. So it immediately qualified for this interesting competition at World of Concrete. And we submitted it and we won second place in the world.
Wow. That's
so awesome. It was really cool.
Is it buried?
No. It's above ground. And it sits in a normal neighborhood.
Really?
And no one would know it. And it's just there. And it could get hit by a Sidewinder missile and live forever still.
Interesting.
And it's designed to be 100% off grid. In fact, interestingly, even though it's in the center of a very predominant neighborhood, in fact, even the front door, which looks like just a normal front door, we built a custom made front door with a 1/4-inch plate of magnesium ballistic steel that could stop a 50 caliber at point blank. And when you lift up on the handle, like a typical really nice door, when you lift up on the handle, it would throw the deadbolt in, except for this threw 16 deadbolts in different directions, similar to like a safe door.
No way.
Yeah. So
does James Bond live there?
So it was, no, it was very like that, right?
Yeah.
So, and we have done James Bond type homes too. So this was one of those homes. And the whole point of it was this guy wanted to make sure that whatever happened in the world, not that he assumed it would, but whatever came, he could be safe with he and his family.
Yeah.
That they could literally go inside, they could pull those latches on those doors, and they could disconnect from all of the municipal connections,
mm-hmm.
and they could live for a year plus without needing the connection to the rest of society. So
that
sounds like an interesting
limited series TV show, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, I mean, that for that person, that probably is an extra level of security, right? Like,
it's an extra level of security.
When things get crazy and stuff, they aren't stressing.
And the funny
like
thing is this guy wasn't a gun guy. It's not like he had turrets, which I've done those too. So it's not like he had turrets or anything like that. He just literally wanted to be able to hunker down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I joked with him, if the whole world falls apart, I'm coming over. And he very quickly said, bring your food supply.
Love it. That's awesome.
Food supply with you.
After going through your Maple Lakes house, I have all these questions, right? So I'm like thinking of questions that. But I'm sure after I go through the Ollie, I'll have all these questions that I'm like, dang it, why did I know these before?
So the Ollie is going to be fabulous. But if you really enjoyed the Maple Lake house, you will equally enjoy, if not, it depending on your personal preference, if not more so with the Ollie. It's the other side of architectural design. Maple Lake was extremely traditional,
yeah,
very early European, and I believe we nailed it 100%. It's quite perfect in so many ways. But then the other side of this architectural bell curve of design is the Ollie. The Ollie is clean, it's transitional, it's modern, it's today.
everybody's going with the I don't know what you want to call it. Not traditional, but what'd you just say?
Transitional modern.
Yeah, the modern kind of thing. Totally 100% different than what I'm used to.
Right.
As old as I am, or as young as I am.
As young as you're,
yeah,
Scott.
But, you know, the New England style, that traditional brick New England type of look, I don't see that much of it here, except maybe up towards Sugar House, maybe.
Yes.
But other than that, you don't see that New England brick style that you see so much of back east.
Well, you know, we tend to build and design based on our environment and our available building products, funny enough. You know, the East Coast is riddled with influences of both England and English and French architecture, predominantly English. You know, the English traditional limestone or brick salt box that you would find over there with perfect symmetry, zero eaves, is a fabulous architecture that works for England. The reason is England typically doesn't have very cold winters. They have wet winters and they have wet springs, but they either the weather is nice and people are outside of the house and enjoying parks, or the weather is bad and they are inside. There's not this in-between space. And England, I mean, if you've been over there, they have woods, but they don't necessarily have forests. So they don't have a lot of trees. So most of their houses are not necessarily made of wood. They're made of things that they have readily available. The Dover, or you know, the white limestone cliffs of Dover are what they are because the entire country is sitting on limestone.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast majority of English architecture is made of limestone and brick.
Yeah.
So you came, then the English came over to America.
They brought
that architecture.
Yeah.
But what do they have here? Well, the East Coast doesn't have a ton of limestone, but they have a ton of sugar pines and these long, wonderfully straight trees that grow super fast, and they can cut them down and turn them into planks, and they can do a clapboard or a horizontal siding, and they can build the exact same perfect saltbox architecture with perfect symmetry, except for they had to put bigger eaves on their house because it doesn't just lightly rain on the East Coast, it rains ridiculously heavy.
Yeah.
So they had to get as much water off the house as possible and off the wood. The other thing is that on the East Coast, it's often too hot on the inside to hang out, unlike in England. And it's often too wet outside to go anywhere else. So they would build these outdoor spaces, gazebos, porches, wraparounds, so that they could be outside but inside.
Yeah.
So it's the same architecture, but built with the materials of the region and designed for the area. So, you know, you start coming across the country and we change for all of this. Snow loads have a lot of effect on our architecture out here. Winter, freezing, and the thaw and freeze have a lot to do with our architecture out here. So our stuff has changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's why we don't see that same stuff as we saw back east. The red brick of Baltimore is because the soil allowed it to be. There's a lot of red clay.
Mm.
We don't have that here. In fact, our typical pioneer brick out here is kind of yellow and gray. If you go down into Provo or down into the old parts of Salt Lake, you see that kind of yellowy, pinky, orangey brick, that pioneer brick, as we call it. It's because our soil is that color, you know? And, you know, if you go back east, that beautiful, rich, dark red is because the soil is that color.
Interesting.
It's not because they chose it. It's and interestingly, we always want what we can't have, right?
Yeah.
So, you go back east and everybody uses New York or Pennsylvania bluestone to pave their patios, and they consider that the cheapest paving material in the planet. And the first thing any homeowner does is when they get in, they ultimately go, I can't wait to throw that stuff away, and I'm going to pour a concrete patio and I'm going to do pavers, right? Out here, we do concrete patios, and then people go, one of these days, I'm going to import that Pennsylvania bluestone and I'm going to lay it all out, right? Because we don't have it. So we always want
what we
don't have
available.
Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
So you should just work out a deal with all those East Coasters that are anxious to tear up their bluestone and ship it out here.
I see.
And if we could trade them for our concrete patios, everybody would be happy.
You know, the one thing I've taken from this interview is just your passion for architecture and how I feel like it's just opened my mind a lot to what I can do to my place to make it more cozy, more inviting, add those textures,
shadow,
that make up.
Shadow lines, little panels.
Yeah. And make it unique. We like to close it asking about if there's people you want to give a shout out to that helped with the house.
Well, I would love to give a shout out to our clients who are fabulous, mm-hmm. And to our entire team at Davies and all of our sister companies that we have. Our entire team is amazing. We have a full interior design department. It's rather large. In fact, our interiors are probably as big as any large interior firm around.
Really?
And we actually have our own architectural team in house too, which is actually as large as any medium to large size architecture firm. You know, and then I think just the collectiveness, I'd love to give a shout out to even our accounting department. You know, people are happy with us because they balance our accounts and keep everybody paid on time, and they do such a good job. And then, you know, our site managers are quite literally the best. They've been doing it the longest. In fact, many of them were themselves owners of their own custom home companies, and they moved over to be with us to help us create something just beyond the norm. All of our trades and vendors are spectacular. We have wonderful long-time relationships with all of them, and they will all be on display and promoted front and center at our parade.
I would recommend go see the Ollie. You'll be able to see a unique or have a unique experience. And who knows, maybe 4 or 5 years from now, we'll have the Camden Yards on
the and my wave pool.
I'm there for both of them.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember that you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to askusutah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.